Hello, everybody. How are you doing?
Hello.
This is Brian Tracy. It's nice to hear from you. I've been preparing this seminar for several weeks now. We've got lots and lots of great stuff to cover.
Great.
Thank you very much for being on here. I promise you that the next hour is going to be one of the most valuable hours that you ever spend. For the next hour, I'm going to give you some great ideas that you can use to build your own personal brand, program these ideas into your life, into your work, and into everything else you do. And we have some people on the line who've already used personal branding successfully. Are you there, Adam?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Nice to have you. Thank you very much for being there. Adam is, as a matter of fact, why don't we just start off, Adam? Tell us what personal branding has done for you.
Well, branding has really revolutionized our business, Brian. I had a company years ago called Adam Christing Productions, and I changed the name to Clean Comedians. We provide event planners with hilarious comedians who are clean and don't offend. And it started off as just an idea, Brian, just sort of a hunch, and it literally became a business. And we grew 45% a year the first 5 years once we wrapped our service around that brand name. We went on to get it trademarked, and now last year we booked 700 separate events.
Huh. Isn't that wonderful?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, what you just said, Adam, is going to lead us right into this seminar, so let us talk a little bit about branding. Now, with regard to personal branding, my personal philosophy, as you know, is that each person has within them enormous untapped potential. Each person has within them the capability to earn 2 and 3 and 5 times what you're earning today. Each person has the ability to accomplish vastly more in life than they've ever accomplished before, and our goal in life is to figure out how to get this out of ourselves, is how to tap into this incredible potential. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is that people may have tremendous potential, but because of the way they are perceived by others, they never get a chance to use it. Because of the way that other people look at them, value them, think about them, talk about them to others, they never get a chance to get to the next stage. So what I learned as a young man, I was very sincere. I worked hard, weeks, months, even years, and I was always kind of discounted by other people until one day somebody took me aside and said, you know, you don't dress very well. Well, I grew up in a family where the only clothes were work clothes. I only had one suit when I graduated from high school, and it fit like a tent that had fallen off the back of a truck. I didn't know anything about dressing, even know how to do a tie. So a couple of friends of mine took me aside, took me to a tailor, and gave me some advice, encouraged me to read, and over time I learned how to dress properly, and it made an extraordinary difference. I found that I could walk into a room or walk into a meeting, and people treated me totally differently. And so I began to study, what is it about branding? What is it about image? What is it about the way people think about you that sets you up to be more successful? It's sort of like if you can think of those nightclubs where all those people are waiting in line and the bouncers are keeping people out, and then the bouncers go down the line and they'll pick certain people and they'll take them to the front of the line and usher them into the nightclub. Well, that's what we want to do. We want to get picked out of the line and moved to the front of the line of life and moved into the best seats. And one of the most important things we do is with branding. So let me define a brand just at the beginning. We'll talk about this as we go. But a brand is basically a promise. When you have a brand, when you have a brand image, it's a promise. And it's a promise that you make to the person who you are asking or trying to influence. But it's not only that, it's the promise you keep. And it is the promise that you are known for keeping. Dr. Theodore Levitt of the Harvard Business School said that the greatest asset that a company has is how it is known to its customers, how it is known to other people, how it is known in the marketplace. In other words, your reputation, your brand, the words that you are known by is the most valuable thing you have. See, what I found is that in terms of buying your products or services, human beings decide emotionally and then justify logically. In other words, they make an immediate emotional jump. It is a natural tendency of human beings that we leap to conclusions quickly and sometimes on the flimsiest of evidence. So we look at a person who's well-dressed, and we instantly assume this person is intelligent as well. And if they're intelligent, they're obviously competent as well. If they're intelligent and competent, they're good people to do business with and be associated with and buy from. Not only that, we find that if you have a good brand, a good personal brand, good personal image or reputation, people are willing to pay you more for your product and argue less. They debate the value of your product. They're willing to accept your prices, even to the point where if your reputation or your brand is strong enough, people will hire you or buy from you without even asking the price, except afterwards they'll say, oh, by the way, what number do I write in the blank? Whereas if your brand is poor, then people will challenge you, they'll question your integrity, they'll question the quality of what you do, they'll fight with you over your prices, and so on. IBM is known throughout the world as a quality company. IBM started off with three basic values back in the 20s when Thomas J. Watson Sr. founded the company, and they were excellence, quality products, customer service, and caring for people. Those are the three values upon which the company was built. When I worked with IBM as an outside consultant, I found that you could make almost any mistake at all in IBM as long as you did not do poor quality work or not give good customer service or treat people poorly, either internally or externally. Now, here's the interesting thing about branding. They started off as international business machines. Actually, you know what they were? They were a punch card operator, a bucket shop in New York, but they had very little going for them, so they picked a name, International Business Machines. Wow. And then they began to expand their business. Here's an interesting thing. As they began to work, their self-concept was that we are international. First thing they did is they set up a branch some years later in Canada, then in Europe, then in Mexico, then in Latin America, and now, of course, all over the world. Then they shortened their name, since International Business Machines was so well known, they shortened it to IBM. And then they began saying, IBM means quality. IBM means customer service. IBM means excellence. And then they just simply dropped it off, so it was just IBM. Now look what happens. Over the years, and I saw this happen with myself, people would say, well, that's kind of like the IBM of restaurants, of Italian restaurants in St. Louis. That's kind of like the IBM of dry cleaners in Chula Vista, California. In other words, IBM became almost like Kleenex or Xerox. It became the name for quality. So here's my question. When people hear your name, what words do they think of? When a person hears your name, what words jerk into their mind? Now here's the other question. What words would it be helpful for them to think of when they think of you? What words should they think of if you wanted to be the most successful person in your business? What words could they think of if you were to change some of the things that you do? In our last telephone conference, one of the things we talked about at the end was loving your customers. If you had a reputation for loving your customers, for really caring about your customers, what would people say when they thought about you? But especially, what would you do differently than you do today if you wanted to create that reputation sometime in the future? So remember, a brand is a promise you make. It's a saying that if you interact with me, if you're involved with me, buy from me, sell with me, go out with me, and so on, these are the promises that I make. This is the kind of person you will get. And a brand always begins with your values. It begins with the values that you hold most dear. When you say, these are my values in my business, this is what I stand for. And in your business, you can say, well, what are my values? And what you do is you look at your business and you say, well, my values are, let me see, my values are quality. My values are excellence. My values are caring for people. My values are quality customer service. My values are responsiveness. My values are teamwork. My values are innovation. Our values are leadership in our industry. Sometimes your value can be technological superiority. Here's the question is, what are your values? Which means, what do you stand for and what will you not stand for? What do you believe in and what do you organize your life around? Now, I would say this, the starting point of building a tremendous personal brand is to start with the principle of integrity. Integrity means that you are absolutely honest with yourself and with everyone in your life. Integrity means that you always tell the truth and that you always do what you say you will do. Because we said before, branding is a promise. And a promise is something that you keep. When a person buys from you, they are accepting your promise and they're expecting you to keep your promise. There's no better reputation than that you could have than for people to say, when you do business with him or her, they always fulfill their promises. They always do what they say they will do. They always come through. They had an interesting little study on Federal Express. Federal Express developed a branding positioning statement. It was when it absolutely positively has to be there by the next morning. And then finally, when it absolutely positively has to be there at 10:30 the next morning. And what they did is they built their entire company around this brand. If you want to send it by snail mail, if you want to send it by something else, that's fine. But when it absolutely positively has to be there tomorrow morning, you send it by Federal Express. Now, they did a study and they found that if they neglected to deliver just 1% of their parcels on time, it would be 94,000 parcels a day that were delivered not on time or not at all. In other words, a quality rating of 99% in promise fulfillment would lead to 94,000 dissatisfied customers who they had not kept their word to. So their quality focus is on 100%. There's an interesting story, by the way, and it has to do with going the extra mile, doing more than you're expected to do. It's a story that they tell about a Federal Express office in Denver, and there was a snowstorm in the mountains outside of Denver, and the Federal Express person rented a helicopter, paid $7,500, flew over and through the storm in order to deliver that package absolutely positively by 10:30 the next morning. Now, people say, well, that's absolutely ridiculous. You can't possibly stay in business spending $7,500 to deliver a $15 package. Well, just a second here. For the rest of their lives, Federal Express has been famous all over the world for that helicopter ride. They got hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of advertising and hundreds of millions of dollars in business because of that story about renting the helicopter. So the question you have to ask is, what attributes do you want to be known by? And here's some of the questions you can ask. You can ask yourself this question. For example, you can say, how do people introduce you to other people? It's a very good test of your current brand. If you're introduced to someone else, someone says, this is my friend or this is so-and-so, how do they introduce you? What words do they use? Do they describe you by your profession? Do they describe you by your level of achievement? Do they describe you by your past? Do they describe you by how much you're earning? How are you described? And here's a second question. What do people say about you when you're not there? What do people say about you when you're not there? When your name comes up and people think about you and talk about you, what words do they use? And then the next question, of course, is what words should they use? What words would it be helpful for them to use if you were to have a superb brand? In our seminars on selling and on pumping up your profits, we talk about the question, what nickel has to drop in the customer's mind for them to buy from you? This is very much a branding statement. And so we ask the question, what is it that has to happen in a customer's mind for them to decide to buy from you rather than from someone else? Now, what Adam said a couple of minutes ago was very interesting. They changed it from basically Adam's productions to clean comedians. Now, you'll notice how clean comedians in our show business market today is a very specific branding statement. It only really has one word that's different from comedians, and that's the word clean. But notice what it contains. It summarizes the entire world of the entertainment that Adam's company offers and leads to 700 bookings a year, vastly more than before he added this name. Why? It's because the word clean is a promise. The word clean says, if you book with us, we promise you that our comedians will be clean. And what happens is people all over the industry, all over the market, want comedians that they can bring into their homes, their families, their companies, their businesses, and so on, who will be funny and humorous and upbeat and never use a foul word. And anybody who's heard some of these things on HBO after 10 o'clock at night knows exactly what I'm talking about. So the question is, what is the attribute, the one word, that if it most described you, would be most helpful for you in your business? What's the one word? Today on the best-selling book lists, the number one book is a book called Execute. And it's a very interesting book. It's written by Larry Bossidy, who has been two or three times a Fortune 500 CEO, has a great reputation for delivery. He's been brought in when the company was in trouble and turned it around. He's been brought in again later when the company got in trouble again and turned it around. And he's been asked over and over again, Larry, what's your secret? And his answer is execution. He said the answer for success is to execute. It is to do what you've been hired to do, and to do it and to keep doing it. It's to fulfill your promise. If you're brought in to turn around the company, then darn well turn around the company. If you've been brought in to pump up the profits and cut the costs and make the hard decisions, then do what you've been hired to do. Now, this expands, by the way, it expands into every area of your interactions with others. Because here's a rule, and it is that everything counts. Everything counts. Everything counts. Everything counts in this sense, is that everything that you do either creates and builds your brand, or weakens it, or destroys your brand. Federal Express has to deliver its packages 100% of the time, or it turns off a customer. Companies have to have products and services that work all the time, or they are violating the trust of their customers. Interesting point, they did a study among customers who complained, and they said to these people, well, you're complaining because of the product or service that you got that was not what you paid for or expected. Do you want your money back? And you know what they said? They said, no, I don't want my money back. I just want it to do what they said it would do when I bought it from them in the first place. I just want it to fulfill the promise. So you have to ask yourself, what are your attributes? And you need 3 to 5 attributes. And you can say that you're honest, dependable, responsive, service-oriented, warm, friendly, helpful, cheerful, detail-oriented, dependable, whatever attributes you pick, but you've got to pick your attributes. As they say in the military, you've got to pick your ground and then defend your ground. You've got to take the high ground, and when you make a decision, this is where I am going to stake my claim. This is going to be my brand. Then you step back and ask yourself, what is my brand now? In other words, what percentage of the time do people use these words to describe me? And if you're honest, we'll all say that maybe, let's say you're a 7 or an 8 in the words that you like the most, the attributes, qualities, virtues that you want to be part of your brand. Then the next question you ask yourself is, what would I do differently? What could I do differently so that people think of me like this all the time? People talk about me like this all the time. And what we have found, it comes right back to Larry Bossidy's book title, Execute. What we have found is that it is personal performance that is the basis or foundation of your personal brand. It is your willingness and your ability to consistently, persistently deliver on your promises, to get the job done, to get the job done punctually, and to get the job done on time, and to get it done well. Interesting, Philip Crosby, who established the Crosby College in Florida, was once asked, what is the definition of quality? And his definition was brilliant. It enabled him to become a multimillionaire teaching this to people who paid him $3,000 or $4,000 a week to hear what I'm about to tell you, okay? No extra charge. And it was this, is quality can be defined as your product or service does what you said it would do when you sold it, and it continues to do it. So let me repeat that. Quality is simply defined as your product or service does what you said it would do when you sold it and took the money, and it continues to do it. The percentage of time that your product continues to do what you said it would do is your quality rating. And your job is to strive for a perfect quality rating, 100% quality rating. If your product or service does it 90% of the time, then you have a 90% rating. With Federal Express, they strive for 100% rating. Now, is it hard to develop a reputation for always doing what you say you will do, no matter what? And the answer is, yes, it is. But what difference does it make in your life? Well, here's what we know. People who have a positive personal brand get jobs much easier than people who don't, because the first thing people do is check your reputation and your references. If you have glowing references, you will be hired faster than if you don't. Second of all, you'll be paid more. Third of all, you'll be given more responsibility sooner. Fourth of all, you'll be promoted faster. Fifth of all, you will have more authority and respect. Sixth of all, your word will be taken by other people as your bond. Seventh of all is your recommendations, your testimonials, your suggestions will be given far greater weight than people whose brand is not as strong as yours. What I have found in every company I've worked with, and as you know, I've worked with hundreds of companies, what I found is that in every company there are people who are highly, highly respected, even though they may not have high positions. It may just be an assistant or a secretary. It may be an accountant or a shipping person. But they're highly respected, and when they have a suggestion, everybody listens, like the old television advertisements for E.F. Hutton. When E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens. When they speak, everybody listens, and the reason is pretty simple. The reason is because they are so well known for doing quality work that they have developed what is called the halo effect. Now, the halo effect means that if you have a reputation for excellence at the work that you do, then you are assumed to be excellent in many other areas as well. So what you do is you focus. This is the focal point concept. And you ask yourself, in what one area, if I were to have a reputation for doing this in a superb way, if I was really excellent in this area, in what one area would it help me the most in all other areas? Whenever I work for companies and we talk about a vision statement, a mission statement for the company, and in this case we're talking about a mission statement for your life, we ask, what is a good vision to have? And you can walk all over the park with this, and there's books full of them, but I'll give you the bottom line. The bottom line is that your vision is to be the best. Your vision is to be absolutely excellent in a particular area. Your vision is to have a reputation that is so good in that area that nobody can touch you. Let me give you an example of branding. The company Mercedes-Benz, who I worked with in Germany, has a reputation for quality engineering. This is a reputation they have built for over 100 years. They have fought desperately worldwide for this reputation. They pay a fortune. As a matter of fact, the Germans are very proud of Mercedes. In fact, anywhere in the world that you go, people will say, that is a Mercedes. Or they will even say this, that is like a Mercedes. Or that's the Mercedes in that business or industry. The reason is because they have fought bitterly to get and hold quality engineering. They charge $10,000, $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 for their cars. They're always the most expensive, but they're quality. Now, let me tell you how important quality is to Mercedes. A few years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, they brought out a new Mercedes-Benz, a smaller version, to compete at a lower price range. And it failed what they call the Elk test. Now, you've never heard of the Elk test, but it was a big thing in Germany. It was on every newspaper and television. They sold these cars into countries like, in this case, Sweden. In Sweden, there are wild elks who walk across the freeway. And a Mercedes driver was driving, and an elk lumbered onto the freeway, and the driver swerved to avoid the elk. But because of a small change in the engineering, the car did not miss the elk, and it hit the elk. And it got into all the newspapers that a Mercedes-Benz driver, even though they swerved as hard as they could not avoid the elk. The car failed the elk test. Mercedes-Benz was so upset about this, they withdrew all the cars that they had manufactured and re-engineered them at a cost of $800 million out of their profits, out of their pockets, so that their car could maintain its brand as a quality engineered car. And they said that where the rubber met the road was in the steering, was in the maneuverability of the car when it hit an elk on a distant highway. Some years ago, the company Intel, and Intel has this brand, Intel Inside. Now, Intel Inside is a brand that they've built at an enormous cost, but what it says is that there's a chip inside that is made by us. If this chip is inside, then you can know, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, that what you are buying is a superb quality product. You can pay top dollar. You can pay premium. This Intel Inside chip separates this product from all other products that do not have an Intel chip. Then, some obscure mathematics professor at a university running a differential equation that calculated to the 10,000th, if you like, found that in a Pentium 2 chip, there was a defect in one of the millions of little tiny circuits that caused this chip to miscalculate at the 10,000th or the 100,000th when this type of calculation was done. So this professor quite proudly told everybody, I found a flaw in an Intel chip. And it got into the newspapers. And Andrew Grove talks about this in his book. He was the chairman of, and still is the chairman of Intel, he's the president. In his book, It Pays to Be a Paranoid, he said, it pays to be a paranoid in business. He said when he heard this, they said, well, this doesn't matter. I mean, nobody is ever going to do a calculation like this. It's a silly thing. It's not worth worrying about. And you know what happened? Is it got into more and more newspapers, and people began to wonder. And they began to say, well, maybe Intel's not a perfect chip. Maybe it does have defects. And Andrew Grove said they had to pull back and say, you know, we've made a mistake here. It's not the flaw itself. It is the brand that is at stake here. And we cannot let anything hurt this brand. And what they did is they did a recall on that chip, and they recalled $1 billion worth of chip, took a $1 billion hit to the bottom line to protect the brand. You've heard it said that people will often sacrifice their lives rather than to compromise their integrity. They'll sacrifice their jobs. They'll sacrifice anything, but they will not compromise their own personal brand. So, let's look at some of the aspects of brand. Let me give you some of the laws of brands. I promised you 7 laws. I'm going to give you 8. The extra one is no extra charge. The first law of branding is the law of specialization. This is very important. It means that you have to focus your brand on one area of achievement. You cannot be all things to all men. Michael Jordan has a brand in basketball. Now, Michael Jordan, as you know, tried to extend his brand. It's called a brand extension into baseball, and it didn't work out. As a matter of fact, it was a miserable failure. The following season, he went back to the Chicago Bulls, rebuilt his brand as a basketball player, and became perhaps the most successful athlete in the history of the world, and will always be remembered as that. So therefore, what is your area of specialization? Now, you can specialize in several different areas. You can specialize in, for example, your line of work. You can specialize in your product. You can specialize in your particular company or industry. You can specialize in the media. You can specialize in your community. You can specialize wherever you want, but you have to know what your own personal brand is, and you have to specialize in that area. And you have to be focused like a laser beam on one thing. For example, if you're in sales, you can say, what would be the most helpful brand for me to have? Well, the most helpful brand might be service-oriented. I want everybody who deals with me to think of me as the most intensely customer service-oriented salesperson they ever dealt with. This person cares more about me as a customer than anybody else. This person is so service-oriented, they are fast, they're efficient, they're dependable, they're reliable, they're honest, they're punctual, they're detailed. They care about me more than anything else. Well, maybe that's your brand image. If that's your brand image as a salesperson, then you ask yourself, what would I have to do every day before a sales conversation? I'd have to prepare thoroughly. During the sales conversation, I'd have to listen carefully. After the sales conversation, I'd have to take careful notes and follow up religiously with everything I promised. So think in terms of the law of specialization. Now, the second law in branding is the law of leadership. you have to be acknowledged as one of the most knowledgeable, respected, or skilled people in your field. So one of the things you ask yourself is, where do I want to take leadership? Where do I want to be the best in my field? And what area do I want to be the best? I have a friend, one of our coaching clients, who is the best at presenting offers. She's very good at listing. She's very good at telephone work. She's very good at many activities. But where she is magical is presenting an offer on a house from an interested buyer. She is so good at it that she orients her entire life so that she does only that. She has a staff that works on getting the listings, that works on all the details, that works on all the research, that does all the preparation and all the setting of appointments, but her skill is the presentation of an offer. And she is so good at it and so capable at it that she is hired by other real estate agents and paid by them to present offers that they may have spent weeks getting from other people. The third area is the law of personality. A brand, your brand, must be built around your personality in all its aspects, including flaws. Now, here's a question. What would be the very best personality brand for you to have? Let's take a wild example. The Australian who wrestles crocodiles. He's got a particular brand. Take another, an actor like Adam Sandler. Take another, an actor like Mel Gibson. Take another, somebody like Dennis Rodman in terms of a particular personality. However, since you're going to be making your living interacting with people, selling your products and services over time, what would be a good brand for you to have? If you wanted people to describe you in a particular way, what would be a good way for them to describe you? And I will give you the answer based on interviews with tens of thousands of customers and ask them, why do you buy from the top people? Why have you bought from them in the past? Why do you continue to buy from them? And you know what they say? They say, well, I don't know. He's not, maybe, or she's not the best dressed, most intelligent, best educated, but he or she is a really nice person. He or she is a really nice person. Remember a few minutes ago I said that people decide emotionally and justify logically. When you are described as a really nice person, those very words cause another person to want to know you, to want to meet you, to want to do business with you, to want to see you, to take your phone calls, to meet with you, to listen to your presentations. Here's another interesting point. No matter what you sell, there will always be problems with it, the way the world is. Anything made, serviced, sold, or delivered by human beings will have problems. However, if you have a great brand for being a really nice person, people will rise above it. They'll say, okay. They will roll with you. They'll be tolerant. They'll be forgiving. They'll be open. They'll give you a chance to make it up and so on because they want to continue doing business with you because you're a nice person. So the most important part of personality is to be a nice person. Let me give you a flip side. I remember once being introduced to a salesman, and he held out his left hand to me rather than his right hand. Well, I already had my right hand out, and halfway out there, and I had to stop and take my right hand back and put my left hand out. And then he took my left hand and he shook it. And I was uncomfortable because it's not usual. And I said, that's unusual. Is your hand okay or something? He said, oh, yeah. He said, my hand's okay. He said, I just shake with my left hand so people won't forget me. Well, he made me feel clumsy and awkward and embarrassed and foolish. And he got his will. I didn't forget him. For the rest of history, I thought of him as a particular part of the anatomy, which is at the south end of the human body. And that's how I thought about him. And you know what? That's how everybody else thought of him as well. Because his attempt to be unique and different was just an irritating mannerism. So an expression of your personality has to be something different. It has to be a positive part. You can have flaws. You can be a little bit overweight. I have friends of mine who are overweight, and they kind of roll with it, and they say, you know, I'm kind of roly-poly, but I really care about my customers. In other words, they make a joke of a particular part of their personality, but it can't be something that's contrived. Now, the fourth law is the law of distinctiveness. Once you've created your personal brand, you have to express it in a unique way. Now, some people express it in a unique way. For example, let us say your personal brand is you want to be a nice person, one of the very best in your field, specialized in a particular area. So distinctively, you can do a single thing. I know a woman whose distinctiveness was she would send a thank you card, and inside the thank you card would be a dried flower. And when you opened the thank you card, the flower fell out on your desk. That was her area of distinctiveness. The thank you card was a way of saying, I appreciate your business, thank you. It's nice to do business with you. And the thank you card was a way of doing more than the average person was, saying that I'm a nice person and I care. And the best part of all was the little flower was that little sort of thing that made people remember her weeks and months and years later. Some people will do something different. Some people will send a pizza. Some people will send a gift basket. Some people will send a piece of poetry suitable for framing or even a poetry book. But it's always something that makes you distinctive. Sometimes you will sign your name in a particular way. Sometimes you will even dress in a particular way. I know some people who always wear a flower. Some people always wear red in terms of a scarf or a tie or a handkerchief in their pocket or something else. So how can you be distinctive? Think about that. By the way, there's probably things about you that are distinctive already, and sometimes one of the things you can do is you can emphasize it. Now, another brand, another law, is called the law of visibility. To be effective, your personal brand must be seen repeatedly and consistently. Now, this is a very important thing because when you form a brand, in a way you're getting into what we call show business. In show business, we say there's no business like show business. What does this mean? It means that when you are distinctive, when you're visible with people, you've got to be seen all the time. My friend Dennis Waitley tells me a story about a top speaker. The speaker wrote a best-selling book, and suddenly he was in demand everywhere. He was being asked to speak to corporations in a variety of places. And after a year of being on the road, speaking, popular, highly paid, and everything else, he decided that he was so good and so popular that he needed to stand back and go to the mountaintop and gaze at his navel and think about his life and decide his next area of greatness, what he wanted to do with his future. So he took a year off. He told his secretary, I'm not taking any calls or bookings. I'm just thinking about myself and my future. A year later, he came back from his personal mountaintop, came back down, and he said, well, I'm ready. And as Dennis told me, he said, but his phone never rang again. You see, if you're not visible, if you're not out there, if you're not talking to people, if you're not moving around, it doesn't do you any good. One of the things that you can do that is very, very important in building your visibility is to network on a regular basis. Go to and join business associations. Go to business meetings. Network with them. Talk to them, meet them, hand out your business cards, get involved on commissions and committees, offer advice, offer to help, send thank you notes, and so on. Be out there where people see you all the time. It's a very interesting thing, is that very often people will hire you, buy from you, recommend you, give you referrals and testimonials and vouch for you for no other reason than they've seen you around a lot. So be visible. You'll find if you look at television shows, for example, like Jay Leno or Letterman or any shows, that talent agents are always trying to get their clients on the air. Get them out there. Get them moving around. Get them visible. Because if you're not visible, what happens is you can fall off the map. Sometimes you see an actor wins an Academy Award, and they are so full of themselves, they decide to go sailing and so on, and you don't see them get another acting job for 3 or 4 years until they finally come back and their agents get them out on radio shows and television shows and doing interviews and, you know, getting in the news, being seen with various people. Number 6, the law of utility. This means that your behavior behind closed doors must match your public brand. You must be consistent. This is a very, very interesting thing. You know, there's a discovery over and over again that many people who have one particular public persona, as they call, in private are totally different. In fact, it's completely destroying of a person's brand to find out that he or she is mean to people. Remember when Leona Helmsley helped build the Helmsley Hotels, and she was very famous, and then she got the reputation as the queen of mean, because it turned out that working people, very often immigrants who had worked for her, were treated like dirt by her when they worked around her home, and her reputation became so bad that people wouldn't talk to her. Eventually, the IRS investigated her, brought charges against her. Her reputation was destroyed, the queen of mean. So it's very important that in your private conversations, you are the same person privately as you are on the outside. One of the greatest brand namings you can get is that people say he or she is always the same. I'll give you an interesting example. As a professional speaker, I have worked with some of the big people. I've worked with ex-presidents. But I'll tell you two people that I like especially, and they just happen to be General Colin Powell and General Norman Schwarzkopf. Now, General Colin Powell was the commanding officer of General Schwarzkopf, and General Schwarzkopf had 830,000 men and women under his command during the Gulf War in 1990-91. I've met them both. I spent many hours with them. Both of them are wonderful speakers, very powerful leaders, great men publicly, and privately, they're exactly the same to the little lady pouring the coffee. They treat everybody with the same graciousness, the same warmth, the same friendliness. Colin Powell is a very gentle man, very friendly, and he's as kindly as a father or as an uncle. He calls me Brian, and we sit and we talk and we stand together and we talk as though we've been friends forever, even though we've only met at these large seminars. With General Schwarzkopf, he's a very tough guy, brash. He's a battlefield commander, but he's as straight as an arrow and just thoroughly enjoyable to deal with, and he's always the same. Does it mean that he's warm and friendly and gushy? Absolutely not, but he's always what he is, whether he's dealing with the president or the head of a nation or a person behind the scenes who's pouring him a cup of coffee. It's very important that in terms of utility, in terms of your behavior, you're always the same on the outside as you are on the inside. The next law, law number 7, is called the law of persistence. Once you've established your personal brand, give it time to grow. Stick with your brand and ignore fads, ignore trends, ignore changes. In other words, be persistent. Be consistent all the time. And the final law is called the law of goodwill. The rule is that the more that you are perceived as well-intentioned or embodying valued ideals, the more influential your brand will be. In other words, the more people see you as a good person, the more they'll like you, and the more they will value doing business with you and being associated with you. So it's really important in terms of your personal brand. And here's what you do. We call this back from the future thinking. Ask yourself if 3 years from now they were going to do a study on you and they were going to come back with a report on the kind of person you were, the way you treated other people, how people talk about you, the words they use, your reputation, your positioning in the hearts and minds of others, your personal brand, what would you want people to say? Specifically, what words would you want them to use? Of all the words, what would be your favorite word? What one word would help you more than anything else in your field? As Adam said, and it's really a work of brilliance to pick a branding or a positioning statement, to pick a word that can be so powerful. But his word was simply clean, because clean, attached to comedians, says it all. What kind of a word could you attach to yourself? Or, if not one word, 3 to 5 words. Then, what changes would you have to make in your behavior every single day in order to make sure that that's what people say and think about you 3 to 5 years from now? Interestingly enough, by the way, there are lots of articles on repositioning your brand. For example, you could decide, and I have a friend who used to sell homes in the $150,000 price range. And that's how she treated herself, that's how she dressed, that's the kind of car she drove. She decided she wanted to sell homes in the $300,000, $350,000 price range. Well, in her neighborhood, in her city, these are people with very high incomes. So what did she do? She moved uptown. She bought a brand new, beautiful car, but not a garish Cadillac. She bought a brand new Mercedes-Benz or a BMW, I'm not sure. Next of all, she went uptown in her dress. She went from wearing excellent clothes to wearing St. John's knits. Why? It's because a St. John's knit is the kind of branding statement that people she would be dealing with would recognize instantly. When a woman wears a St. John's, it's picked out across a crowded room. That person is classed. By the way, you heard recently that Ann Landers died, and that Ann Landers is a twin sister, and her twin sister is Dear Abby. And I was on a plane recently coming back from St. Louis, And there's a little old lady sitting next to me, very nice lady, talking to some people across the aisle, but she was beautifully dressed in St. John's knit. And I turned to her and I said, "You know, you look like a real somebody." I said, "Who are you?" She said, "I'm Dear Abby." And I just about fell off my chair because I had been reading her column all my life. And I said, "I know you. I've been reading your stuff." We began to talk, and we talked. And here is one of the most famous, wealthiest, most successful columnists in the history of journalism sitting there. And you know, she was as nice a person as she is in her columns. She was warm. She was friendly. She was thoughtful. She was insightful. She asked questions. She had observations. She had opinions. She was exactly the brand. And she was not contrived. She wasn't trying anything at all. So when you think of that, you think, wow, that's how you want to be thought of in the future. Then finally, what is your leading attribute? Pick your number one word. What's the word that you want more than anything else? Now, there's a particular area of branding I want to talk to you about that is very important. It has to do with personal image. Remember when I talked at the beginning, I talked about how branding and my image was so important, is most people don't know how to dress well. And there's nothing wrong with this. As Thomas J. Watson Jr. once said, there's nothing wrong with making a mistake at IBM, but it is unforgivable to make the same mistake repeatedly. When IBM began to move into the big leagues, they looked at their salespeople, many of whom came from the cash register business, many of whom were called drummers. They just kind of banged away. And they said, you know, 99% of all the contact that our customers will have with our company will be our salespeople until the product is sold and delivered and serviced. So therefore, we have to put all of our focus on our salespeople. And for many years, there was an IBM look. It was a dark suit, either black or gray or navy blue. It was a white shirt and a dark tie and a short haircut. And that was the only thing that you could wear. In the 60s, when the flower children were going wild and there were riots in the universities and it was going to San Francisco and everything else, when everything was going wild in IBM, one day, one of the top salespeople, one of the stars in the nation, came to work with a pastel blue shirt. Everything else the same, but the shirt was not white. It was a light pastel blue. And IBM at that time had over 100,000 employees, and it went out through the entire world market. What would happen? It went all the way up to the president's suite. They went to the chairman of the board. It went all the way back down again, and they said, "It's okay. The times, they are a-changing, and he is one of the top guys in the company." That was the first break after 50 years from a straight white shirt, because IBM knew that the way people looked was the key. A friend of mine who used to sell for a rival computer company lost a $350,000 deal to IBM, and he couldn't believe it. His product was better, it was faster, it had more functions, more services, it was cheaper and everything else, yet they paid more for a product that did less to IBM. And he called up the customer and he said, "You know, why?" He said, "Well, we just wanted to go with IBM." He said, "Could I meet this guy? Could you introduce me to the guy at IBM that sold this to you?" And they said, no, look, we don't want to get into this. We don't want a problem. We don't want anything." He said, "Look, I just want to meet him." So they set up a meeting for coffee. And he met the guy, and he walked in. This fellow came in with a beautiful three-piece suit. He had a watch fob, beautifully groomed, beautifully polished Italian shoes. His beautifully manicured with a gold watch. He had a lovely tie with a beautiful tie clip. And he sat down and he said, "How are you?" He was extremely well-mannered. This guy was sitting there. He had khaki pants, long hair, rumpled shirt, sweater. He had his briefcase, which looked like it had been dragged behind a car for several years. And he looked at him and he looked at himself and he said, "Oh my heavens." He said, "Now I know why I lost the deal." He said, "The people that I was talking to could not get over how I looked." So here's what we have found. And you may not like it, but the way you look is a reflection of how your product or service works. If you look great, it is assumed that everything you do is good, that your product is good, your service is good, your company is good, your people are good, your prices are justified, and your service and your follow-up will be good. All my relationships with you will be good because you look good. So therefore, what I say to people is run, don't walk. Get at least one book on image. Hire an image consultant. They're all around. They charge you a few hundred dollars. sometimes a little bit more. They'll even take you shopping. By the way, when I was at the top of my game, I went shopping with an image consultant to a specialty men's store who walked me through the store and showed me how to change my image so it would be a little bit less straight-laced, a little bit less conservative, a bit more relaxed, a bit more approachable. And so I bought different clothes, different shirts, different tones, different pants, different jackets. It was a real change for me because I was used to the IBM look. Early in my career, somebody in an airport came up to me and said, you know, you look like you work for IBM. And I thought that was the greatest compliment a person could have. And ever after, I strived to look like that beautiful, semi-formal IBM New York look. Well, in your business, you have to ask, what is the best look? And the way you decide that is look at the highest paid people in your field. Look at the people making more money than anybody else. Look at the way they dress. Look at the way they use accessories. Look at the way they groom. Look at the cars that they drive. Look at everything about them. And you know what you'll find? Is you begin to set them up as your role model. Some years ago, I met a top salesman, and he told me that he started off at the bottom of his sales force. He struggled for about 6 months. He was barely making a go of it, and then he had an eye-opening experience. He realized when he looked at himself, he looked like one of the lowest paid people in his branch. Then he looked around, and he looked at the three or four people in his branch who were the highest paid, and he noticed they looked very different from him. They had different briefcases. They dressed differently. They groomed differently. They worked differently. They used their time differently. So he went up to them, and he said, what are you doing differently from me? And they were reluctant to, you know, cause him a problem. But they said, well, this is what I learned when I was a young person from my mentors. So he began to dress the way they did. Now, here's what he said he did. He would get up every morning, get dressed, and he would stand in front of a full-length mirror. He'd say, do I look like one of the top people in my branch? Do I look like one of the top people in my branch? And if he didn't, he went back and changed. And he kept changing until he felt he looked like one of the top people. And you know what? In 6 months, he was one of the top people and having lunch and coffee with one of the top people. Then he began asking, do I look like the top people in this district? Do I look like one of the top people in this district? And he went to a couple of conventions where they gave away prizes, and he looked at the top people, and he began to use them as his role model. And pretty soon, he was one of the top people in his district. Within 3 years, he was on the stage at the national convention receiving the award for one of the top people in the country. He said, and you know, the interesting thing is, at every single stage, I asked other top people for advice. And now I've gotten to the top. On the stage, they say, here's a person who's come from nowhere and in a few years come to the top of our profession. He said, the surprising thing is that in these years, not a single person has ever asked me for my advice. So one of the most important pieces of advice I can give you is go to the top people in your field. Ask them for advice. What can you do to change the way you look, to change your image, to change your brand, to change your positioning? There's three parts of your dress. First of all, dress for success. Remember, one flaw in your dress can have an inordinate impact. Imagine if you're a man and you wear everything perfect, a beautiful, expensive suit, beautiful shirt, beautiful clothes, beautiful ties, everything, but you wear a tie with a girl with a hula hoop on it with two little lights in the middle that flicker off and on. Imagine what that would do to your image. What they have found in thousands and thousands of cases that changing one element of your image dramatically changes the way you're perceived by other people and treated by other people. Another key part of your image is your grooming. And it's very important that you look like the top people in your field. And the top people in selling always dress a little bit more conservatively, and they always groom a little bit more conservatively. They give a little bit of extra thought to looking a little bit lower keyed and a little bit more professional than the average person. And the third part of your image is always your attitude. It means that you're always a positive person. You're always a pleasant person. Remember, people decide emotionally, then justify logically, and the more likable and nicer person you are, the better it will be. The second part of your image is your behavior. And your behavior has to do with what we said at the very beginning, the promises you make and the promises you keep. It has to do with the fact that you're punctual. When you say you'll be there on time, you're on time. And you don't make excuses and say you got stuck in traffic. It means that you're reliable. If you say you'll get back to people, you do. If you say you'll send them things, you will. If you say you'll fax them a document, you do. If you say you'll email something, you get onto it right away. But especially today, it means that you're prompt, that you respond quickly, that you move fast when your customer needs it. There's probably nothing that will give you a better brand than to be known as a nice, customer-focused person who moves quickly when their customer has a need of some kind. And finally, the most important part of your brand, most important part of your identity, is the quality of your work and the quality of your performance. Your job, more than anything else throughout your life, is to do your job really, really well, to do it better and better, to continually improve yourself, to continually think every day, what's my next miracle? To continually think every day, how can I be better today than I was tomorrow? And keep asking yourself, what does my customer consider more important in terms of performance than anything else, and how can I improve in that area? One last point in building your personal brand. Every single time you deal with a customer, ask this question. How can I improve my service to you next time? How can I be better next time? How can I do it better next time? The interesting thing we have found is if you ask a customer, how's everything going, they'll always say fine. But if you ask them, how can we improve our service to you next time? How can I do this better next time? They'll always have an idea. And the speed and the promptness and the reliability and dependability with which you move on satisfying your customers by giving them more of the things that they want faster than anybody else will do more to enhance your brand, increase your income, boost your sales, and improve your success than anything else you can do. That's the key to personal branding. And I hope you practice it every single day.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.